And I am Marie of Romania. Dorothy Parker. 10. Advice for Modern Women. There is a tide in the affairs of women which, when taken at the flood, leads God knows where. Lord Byron. The social role of women has undergone a radical change in recent years. This is the result of feminism, and feminism is the result of a few ignorant and literal-minded women letting the cat out of the bag about which is the superior sex. Once women made it public that they could do things better than men, they were, of course, forced to do them. Now women have to be elected to political office, get jobs as presidents of major corporations, and so on, instead of ruling the earth by batting their eyelashes the way they used to. If the mothers of Kate Millett and Susan B. Anthony had only taken more time to explain things to their daughters, it would have saved a lot of bother for more able and intelligent women like Margaret Thatcher. Forcing men to surrender. Open competition between the sexes presents considerable dangers to our society. Outnumbered and possessed of inferior capabilities, men are on the defensive. This may turn them desperate and vicious. It will be in everyone's best interests if women get men to surrender as quickly as possible. Women can weaken the opposition by encouraging men to get in touch with their emotions. One of the few advantages men ever had over women was their emotional detachment. Think how valuable this would be to someone like Mother Teresa, who is in such constant danger of being overcome by empathy. In the past, most men were emotionally cold and unable to show affection. Many of our fathers could come home from work to a nagging and slovenly wife and a house full of screaming brats and show no affection at all. Of course, this has changed. For one thing, our parents are divorced, but also modern men are already much more in touch with their emotions than they used to be. They can cry like our fathers did when they saw the court-ordered property settlement. Do what you can to promote this trend. Make it clear to the men in your life that not only is crying permissible, it is required if their feelings are to be given any credibility. These days it's perfectly proper for a woman to sleep with a man before marrying him, or even before knowing his last name, as long as she's certain he's not a gay drug addict. But a woman who sleeps with a man before seeing his eyes mist over with need and desire is coming very close to impropriety. Crying on demand may be too much for some men. If so, remind them that they are also expected to get erections on demand. That can make any man cry. Vishy guys. It is important, however, for women to resist the temptation to demand unconditional surrender from the male sex. Men might get cranky in defeat, like Milton's Satan. They might decide that it's better to rule in the duck blinds and bowling alleys than to serve in the House of Representatives, for example. And professional bowlers are very poor alimony risks. On the other hand, Satan probably wouldn't have talked so big if God had been his wife. He would have been too busy getting brimstone out of there and installing air conditioning. Still, it's best to let men keep some vestige of their dignity, the way the Germans let the French keep Marshal Petain. When you go on a date with a man, it's perfectly acceptable to make it clear to him that you are harder working, more successful, and better paid than he is. But you should also realize that he needs to retain a measure of self-respect, which is why, no matter how much you're making, you should let him pay for everything. Women can also reassure men about their social position by adhering to traditional forms of address. An unmarried man is called Mr., and a married man is called in a loud, shrill voice 5 or 6 times a day on the telephone at work. Men like to think of themselves as silent and strong. This is why women in the traditional marital role were always telling their husbands to shut up and rearrange the furniture. Modern women can achieve similar results by silencing their male subordinates at board meetings, then making decisions that result in corporate reorganization under Chapter 11 of the bankruptcy laws. woman's duty to preserve mankind. Besides the selfish reasons for sparing men, there is another consideration. Men are part of the earth's natural heritage. It would be a shame for the children of the future to grow up without knowing what a man looks like, never witnessing the impressive bulk of an unshaved male lying on the couch in an undershirt and boxer shorts, or seeing men only in zoos. Also, the biology of life on Earth is complex. No one knows the exact role of men in the planet's biosphere. Their extinction may result in some unforeseen ecological disaster. 11. Advice for Modern Men. Here's to woman. Would that we could fall into her arms without falling into her hands. Ambrose Bierce. Society is now influenced, shaped, and even to a large extent controlled by women. This is a far cry from the world of our childhood, when society was controlled by, well, as the author recalls, society was controlled by mom. Christmas dinner for all the relatives, square dancing, the PTA, split-level ranch houses with 2.5 baths. Surely no man thought these up. Feminism seems to be a case of women having won a leg wrestling match with their own other leg. There is only one thing for men to do in response to this confusing situation, which is the same thing men have always done, which is anything women want. What do women want? But what do women want? Perhaps we can shed some light on the question by examining feminist objections to traditional female social roles. Feminists believe unliberated women are not in control of their own lives, that they are not given adequate opportunities to realize their own potential. They feel women are overburdened with domestic responsibilities, underpaid for professional work, and exploited in every way. Of course, the average man can make the same complaints, but the cases are not comparable. Those conditions make the average man want a drink. They make the average woman want a law degree, a convertible, children, a Rolex watch, a seat on the stock exchange, 2 Valium, a lovely home, the lead role in a movie biography of Lottie Lenya, a pretty bracelet, the Nobel Prize, and a husband. 4 rules for modern men trying to give women what they want. 1. Be a husband to all women. No matter how liberated she is, every woman still wants a husband. No one knows why, but it's true. Even Jane Fonda has a husband, of a sort. Being a husband to all women is biologically a daunting proposition. Locker room claims to the contrary, most of us find it's all we can do to service just one woman, let alone the whole sex. However, it is the privately held opinion of most women that their spouses are not much good for this anyway. There are other more characteristic and less physically taxing ways of acting the husband. Even if you live alone, you should put your feet up on the furniture, smoke stinky cigars, and never take the garbage out. Identify with the role. Try to be a husband at all times. Refer to any woman within earshot as the old lady. Ask every woman you meet, when's dinner? And go right up to women you've never seen before in your life and tell them they've put on weight. 2. Provide orgasms. Another of women's grievances is that male sexual techniques do not result in satisfactory female climaxes. Personally, the author is sure this is true. He did once get a woman to yell, "Oh God, oh God," but it turned out his golden retriever had bitten her on the foot. Men must therefore be certain to provide orgasms to any females with whom they are allowed intimate contact. The author wishes he could be more specific, but he cannot. Although he is in favor of feminism, he is still only a man, and frankly does not know anything about where female orgasms come from. However, Women seem to get a lot of what they like at cute little shops with names like Things and Stuff. Maybe next time you're at the mall, you should check it out. Number 3. Be a He-Man. He-Men used to do things like fly jet fighter planes and climb Mount Everest. They did these things to impress timorous and admiring women. Once women stopped being timorous and admiring, it was the secret hope of all of us He-Men that we could stop flying jet fighter planes and climbing Mount Everest and spend the rest of our lives in a cozy restaurant with nothing more dangerous than a bad oyster for miles in any direction. Unfortunately, we just look too cute in our flight suits and parkas for women to let us stop. This is why Margaret Thatcher had to invade the Falklands. Number 4. Be helpful. Men have always been expected to be helpful to women. The same is true now, but the mode of helpfulness has changed with changing sex roles. One example will suffice. In the past, a man was expected to give his seat on a bus to a woman. Today, it would be much more courteous for that man to give her his job. The future of the male sex. Having acquiesced to feminism, most men are adjusting to present realities. There have been no mass suicides among professional ice hockey teams or other all-male groups, and so far very few of us have been rounded up and placed in camps other than the usual fishing ones. But what does the future hold? What part will men play in the society of tomorrow? Well, women have taken our jobs and homosexuals are wearing the parkas and flight suits, and that probably means we'll be sitting around the house in our underwear watching NFL football. Yet there's still a place in the world for men. Women want to be a lot of things traditionally considered masculine. Doctors, rock stars, bodybuilders, presidents of the United States. But there are plenty of masculine things women have so far shown no desire to be. Pipe smokers, first-rate spin casters, wise old drunks, quiet. And there is one thing women can never take away from men. We die sooner. 12. Modern dating, its causes and cures. Were it not for imagination, sir, a man would be as happy in the arms of a chambermaid as of a duchess. Samuel Johnson. Dating is a social engagement with the threat of sex at its conclusion. Most dating results from lingering guilt about masturbation. Of course, no one feels religious or ethical guilt about masturbation anymore. But people do feel guilty for not being more successful. They believe if they were more successful, they would have someone to handle their genitals for them and would not have to do it themselves. Sophisticated people masturbate without compunction. They do it for reasons of health, privacy, thrift, and because of the remarkable perfection of invisible sexual partners. But, more important, they masturbate for philosophical reasons. It is an ethos of modern life that before you are able to love others, you must first love yourself. And what's love without sex? But people who are as fond of impressing others as they are of being impressed with themselves still feel compelled to have sexual relationships. Naturally, if had at all, these relationships should be had according to the forms and usages of modern society. Who should not date? Polite dating is generally accepted in society, but there are some people who should refrain from doing it publicly. People who have just received a clean bill of health on an AIDS antibody test, because half the fun of modern dating is contained in the spectacle of two slight acquaintances trying to figure out polite ways to ask each other whether they perform anal sex with hemophiliac bisexual Central African drug addicts. Recent widows or widowers should not take a date to the funeral. It's impolite for old people to date, because the rest of us are disgusted at the thought of them in bed together. And people who have just been married are really not supposed to go out with anyone except their new mate for a few weeks at least. But although it's rude for a bride to cheat on her husband, it would be equally rude to make her feel bad about it. Remember the famous example of the hostess whose guest mistakenly drank from the finger bowl. The hostess picked up a finger bowl and drank also. Be the same way. If your new wife is having sex with someone else, make her as comfortable as you can by having sex with that person too. Meeting people. The first consideration in dating is whom to date. Pickups, social engagements with total strangers, often initiated in bars, have gone completely out of style. Partly this is a result of AIDS, although it's a well-known fact that extra-attractive strangers, especially cute girls, never have this disease. Another more important reason for the demise of the pickup is that there are only 5 types of people, and what with the exhausting vogue for meeting people in the 60s, 70s, and early 80s, we've met them all. The 5 types of people are people whom you like more than they like you. People who like you more than you like them. Rich fools. Poor fools. People just like your parents. None of these is the type of person you're looking for. The fashionable person to date nowadays is someone you've known for years and somehow neglected to sleep with during the promiscuity hysteria. You'll have a lot in common with this person. One thing you'll have in common is trying to figure out if maybe you did sleep together and both forgot it. Then you can talk about all the people you both slept with and whether any of them are losing a lot of weight or are dead. And when you've exhausted those 2 subjects, you can screw. But never on the first date. Another well-known fact about AIDS is that it's only transmitted on first dates. You cannot get AIDS from sex you had to wait for. Making a date. Dates used to be made days or even weeks in advance. Now, dates tend to be made the day after. That is, you get a phone call from someone who says, "If anyone asks, I was out to dinner with you last night, okay?" Some dates are still made in advance, of course, but it is no longer necessarily the man who does the asking. It is now considered proper for a woman to ask a man out on a date. It is not, however, considered proper for the man to refuse, because he has to wash his hair, not unless his blow dryer really is broken. Dates are still canceled the same way they have always been, which is at the last possible moment. But it happens more often than it used to. Our society has become increasingly affluent. Therefore, the probability of someone better than you coming along has improved. Dating behavior. When a modern couple are out on a date, the key to behavior is equality. If you are a man taking a woman out, you should not cut up her food for her, tie her shoes, put her on your shoulders to see a parade, or perform any of the other services you would provide to a child or a trained chimpanzee. You may, though, hold a door open, light a cigarette, or assist a woman with her coat. In other words, you may extend various courtesies to a woman, but only those courtesies you would extend to another man. Whether you should fondle her knee or run your hand up under her skirt is another question. Health concerns being what they are these days, the author really does not know what you would do with a male friend in a skirt under similar circumstances. For reasons discussed in Chapter 10, men generally pay for all expenses on a date. Exceptions are made if the woman is uncommonly rich or ugly. Either sex, however, may bring a little gift, its value to be determined by the bizarreness of the sexual request to be made later in the relationship. Telling the difference between accepting these gifts and performing an act of prostitution is not a problem, as there is no difference. Where to go on a date. Sex without any social relationship preceding it is tantamount to treating people like objects. People shouldn't be treated like objects. They aren't that valuable. So you have to go someplace before you screw, and that place is usually dinner. Having dinner before sex gives you a chance to reconsider and masturbate after all. A lot of people are better imagined in your bed than found there in the morning. When should a man get an erection? Whenever it becomes clear that a date is moving to its natural conclusion, it is then polite for a man to begin having an erection. There is no better compliment that a man can pay. To be courteous, however, a man refrains from getting an erection during kissing until the kisses have passed from the closed mouth, bus on the lips, to the open mouth, French style. A man gets a slight or salutary erection when he strokes the breasts or buttocks of his date. He should get a full erection whenever his date purposely touches his genitals. If there is a dance floor at the restaurant, a well-bred man gets an erection during close dancing, but not during fast or disco dancing when he and his partner are separated and an erection would stick out and spoil the lines of his suit. Erections are perfectly proper when seated at the table, but a man should lose his immediately when he gets up to go to the bathroom. Otherwise, it will look as though he has someone waiting in there. An erection in the car or taxicab after dinner is considered very good manners, and a polite man always gets an erection during sex. Dating pitfalls. The one serious dating pitfall is the possibility that the person you date may contract an infatuation for you. Infatuation is much more dangerous than love or marriage. Modern marriages are happy, casual affairs, easily entered into and easily gotten out of. Modern love of one person for another is so rare that it hardly presents a problem. But now that love and marriage are no longer serious emotional concerns, infatuation is forced to bear the freight of all the human psyche's pathetic needs, drives, tensions, and energies. As a result, we have been turned into an entire society of 14-year-olds with crushes on our gym teacher. But with the physical and financial freedoms of adulthood at our command, we are able to harass that gym teacher much more effectively than we could in junior high. If you fear that your date is becoming infatuated with you, what you should do is fart as loudly as you can, right in front of her or him. This may seem a coarse thing to do, but it is almost impossible for someone to retain an idealized, dreamy conception of you when you've just blown the slipcovers off the furniture and killed all the pets. 13. More sex, if you must. Neither shalt thou lie with any beast to defile thyself therewith, neither shall any woman stand before a beast to lie down thereto. It is confusion. Leviticus 18:23. Sexual variations used to be considered impolite for fear that servants might walk in during them. It was thought that if the lower classes discovered the more exotic forms of sexual coupling, nothing would ever get done around the house, which is exactly what has happened. Nothing gets done around the house or anywhere else these days because the lower classes are all out dressing up in garter belts and watching mud wrestling matches. Very civilized people still consider sexual variations to be rude. Normal intercourse and customary caresses should be enough if you are really in love with your sexual partner. But since no one is, and since promiscuity is currently suicidal, sexual experimentation and even perversion have gained a sort of general social acceptance, like using the same size glasses for red and white wine. Unusual positions. There are any number of positions from which the sex act may be accomplished. Most of them are polite if your physique bears exposure at that angle, and none of them are rude with the lights off. Very modern people don't consider unusual physical positions exciting. They like unusual social positions instead. A wealthy and celebrated 45-year-old movie actress and a 17-year-old boy who parks cars at the Beverly Hills Hotel That's considered exciting in Hollywood. On the other hand, middle-class people find this disturbing. When the actress and the car jockey start to write and direct movies together, middle-class people are disturbed at paying $7 to see the results. Oral sex. Oral sex is currently very trendy. It is even preferred to the regular kind. It is preferred because it's the only way most of us can get our sex partners to shut up. A few rules of common courtesy should be observed during oral sex. Never do anything to your partner with your teeth that you wouldn't do to an expensive waterproof wristwatch. And once you've had a good look around down there, be sure to pay your partner a compliment of some kind. Restrict quantitative compliments to men, however. "You sure have a big ass" is not considered flattery by most women. Vanishing sex acts. A number of old-fashioned sex acts, while still correct, have fallen into disuse. This is a shame. Such practices as the dry hump had undeniable charm. It allowed a woman to investigate a man's erectile abilities without actually getting his clothes off and putting him in a position where he felt obligated to do something he could not, with all the resultant dull small talk about how this happens to everyone. Visa and MasterCard have made dry humping obsolete. Easily available credit killed the notion of saving up to get something you want, and thus the concept of deferred pleasure was eradicated from our society. Without deferred pleasure, there is no petting either. Modern couples, once they've decided to couple, just strip their clothes off and go at it. In addition to credit cards, blame must also be placed on ex-President Nixon's decision to let the U.S. dollar float in relation to other Western currencies. A decade and a half of monetary instability has conditioned people to utilize their assets immediately. Despite lobbying by the dry cleaning industry and by safe sex advocacy groups, the hand job is also disappearing. It's hard to understand why the hand job, with its very modern, detached, impersonal character, is fading from use. Perhaps it's because jacking people off is done so much over the phone these days. Mild bondage. The uncertain and frenetic nature of modern life has led to the increasing popularity of mild bondage. When you're tied to the bed, at least you know where you're going to be for the next few minutes. And dominant partners enjoy the sense of having control over a situation, something they never get in real life. The dominant partner should show courtesy, however, and not abuse that position of control. It would be rude to get your sexual satisfaction by tying someone to the bed and then leaving him or her there and going out with someone more attractive. More extreme forms of bondage. More extreme forms of bondage involve homes in the suburbs, station wagons, household food budgets, and little league coaching activities, and are too alarming and repulsive to discuss in print. Sadism. The dominant partner in a sadistic relationship must adhere to a strict set of rules. Dominance must, in appearance, attitude, and tone of voice, always give the impression of being in charge. They must never hurt the submissive partner more than that person wishes to be hurt. They must take care not to injure the health of the submissive partner and must take all responsibility for the actions and equipment used during sex. In general, the dominant partner must go to a great deal of bother and expense, and dominance is a very sadistic role to force anyone into. Masochism. Masochists are people who have pain confused with pleasure. In a society which has television confused with entertainment, Doritos confused with food, and Dan Quayle confused with a national political leader, masochists are clearly less mixed up than the rest of us. Because they are admired for their relative good sense, masochists should be careful to mind their manners. They should be especially kind to sadists, remembering that sadists are to be pitied because they find violence only sexually rewarding instead of financially rewarding, the way movie producers and owners of NFL football teams do. Cross-dressing. Modern people often feel a need to take on sexual roles other than their own. This probably stems from a not unfounded idea about our personal lives that nothing could be worse than the way things are already. The most common type of cross-dressing is practiced by homosexual men who have adopted the blue jeans, work shirt, and construction boot dress of heterosexual men. This has led to some unpleasantness between gay men and straight women. The women feel that it was they, not gays, who fought the battle for sexual equality, and therefore it's a woman's prerogative to wear blue jeans, work shirts, and construction boots. Some heterosexual men occasionally don pantyhose and a bra in the privacy of the bedroom. But in general, straight men have kept a lower profile about their urge to cross-dress. Mostly they've limited themselves to puttering around the house in bathrobes and using lots of chapstick when they go skiing. The only real firm rule of taste about cross-dressing is that neither sex should ever wear anything they haven't yet figured out how to go to the bathroom in. Homosexuality. It is the height of fashion to think, dress, and act like a homosexual. But suddenly, it has become very unfashionable to be one. AIDS is only partly to blame. There's also the immense fatigue everyone is feeling with equality. Blacks, Hispanics, Asians, cripples, women, and guests on the Oprah Winfrey Show are all demanding to be treated as equals. Homosexuals are just one more voice of complaint in an already too querulous world. If all these people want to be equal with each other, fine. But since homosexuals are often wealthy and famous, treating them as equals is not only difficult, but can actually be construed as rudeness. The whole thing is a social mess. Wife swapping. Wife swapping is never done in the best circles of society. Wives can rarely, if ever, be traded for anything useful, like a set of golf clubs. Sex toys. There are a number of mechanical devices which increase sexual arousal, particularly in women. Chief among these is the Porsche 911 Cabriolet. Incest. It is very bad form to screw your children except in your will. Incest with a brother or sister is perfectly acceptable, however, as long as it is done to enliven an otherwise bland secret diary, set of memoirs, or unauthorized biography. If it is done purely for physical pleasure, though, it looks to the world like a mere convenience and reflects poorly on the social lives of you both. Child molesting. It is not good manners for an adult to insist on having sexual intercourse with a child, just as it is not good manners for a child to insist on having sexual intercourse with an adult. The tone of society would be greatly improved if these two axioms were adhered to. Rape. Rape is extremely rude. Rape is a complete and total violation of the privacy of an individual. Despite the fact that complete and total violation of the privacy of individuals is one of our society's most popular and fashionable pastimes, rape is still considered rude. This is because rape shows the ignorance of the rapist. If the rapist had pursued the more accepted forms of privacy invasion, he would know all the intimate details of his intended victim's life. When you find that much out about most people these days, you don't even want to shake their hands, let alone chase them down the street. 14. Where babies come from and where they should go. And one time a little girl let all us laugh and grin and make fun of everyone and all her blood and kin. And once, when they was company, and old folks was there, she mocked 'em and shocked 'em and said she didn't care. And this as she kicked her heels and turned to run and hide, they was two great big black things a-standin' by her side. And they snatched her through the ceilin', for she knowed what she's about. And the goblins'll get you if you don't watch out. James Whitcomb Riley. Having children is impolite. It imposes on the peace and quiet of others, and leaves you with less time for that key component of courtesy, being nice to yourself. But rude things do happen. In fact, they're happening at a horrific rate because the generation that refused to grow up has finally spawned, resulting in Baby Boom 2, the terror continues. Suddenly, there are millions of children all over the place, all of them named Jason and Rachel. Where children come from? Children are caused by having sex. Because of the media attention paid to child napping, artificial insemination, surrogate motherhood, in vitro fertilization, and illegal adoption, it can be easy to forget this. But normal sex, consult your doctor, can result in pregnancy. Astonishingly enough, this is often intentional. Why have children? Humans are the only animals that have children on purpose, with the exception of guppies who like to eat theirs. Of course, nature wants every creature to produce more living things, so all of us, and not just guppies, will have something to eat. But almost no one eats babies anymore. There must be reasons other than natural ones for our urge to breed. Men have children to prove they aren't impotent, or at least that some of their friends aren't. And women have children because no modern woman should reach the age of 45 without an excuse for failing in her career. This last reason for having children is the entire cause of the current fertilization craze. Abortions. Very busy parents should consider this option. Aborted children are inexpensive and require less quality time. And abortions are practically worry-free, since there are any number of very fervent right-to-life organizations available to worry about them for you. Pregnancy. A pregnant woman is expected to act joyful, and indeed, she may be quite happy if she has bulimia and enjoys throwing up. Pregnant women should be given special treatment, especially by politicians attempting to garner votes by emphasizing bogus family values to a generation of Americans who hated their families and everything to do with them. Pregnant women should be given free prenatal care, free day care, 10,000-day paid maternity leave, Medicare, Medicaid, and daily home visits by the Surgeon General of the United States. To combat sexism, pregnant men should be given the same things. The rest of the taxpayers can go get screwed without getting pregnant. Infant care. Correct infant care is vital to producing super babies. Super babies are similar to regular babies, except they belong to you. Never use commercially prepared baby food. There are rumors that it causes cancer. Feed your child the same grotesque and faddish foods that you eat. Soy cakes, kelp, alcohol-free beer, 12 pounds of oat bran a day, whatever dietary foolishness is current in your house. Then force the rest of your irrational activities on the child. It doesn't matter when a kid begins to walk or talk, but it's very important that he should begin to work out at the gym and communicate openly with his child's psychiatrist as soon as possible. An infant should be weaned from the breast as soon as the mother has had an opportunity to shock and discomfort her boss, mother-in-law, and husband's friends by breastfeeding the baby in public. Weaning a child from the breast is very similar to weaning an adult from alcohol or drugs. The same techniques of substitution and psychological support may be used. Babies are not, however, generally sent to the Betty Ford Clinic or AA meetings. But this might not be a bad idea. Give it a try. Toilet training. Modern parents believe toilet training should be an easy and casual affair. Just let the child shit all over everything. This prepares him or her for a brilliant career as a talk show host. Discipline. It used to be thought that children should act like little adults. Like many things that used to be thought, this is true. In fact, now more than ever. Today's real adults are self-involved, impulsive, inarticulate, and spend as much time as possible out playing. They can't sit still, don't like to get dressed up, and hate every kind of activity that requires self-restraint. Adults are the children of today, and therefore children have to be adults, because there's only so much room in the world for kids. One way to discipline a child is by having a tantrum. Cry, scream, or hold your breath until the child behaves. When dealing with immature behavior such as nose-picking, genital fondling, or public belching, try to be discreet so your child won't make fun of you when you do it. You can also reason with even the smallest child. Tell a baby, when you cry in the middle of the night and have to be fed and walked and burped, it, like, you know, violates my space. This is useless but instructive. It teaches both you and the child an important lesson in the powers of logic. Spanking can be effective at times, especially since it's much less dangerous than striking a person your own size. But usually you should try to be an easygoing parent. That way the child will be much more surprised and terrified when you hit him. Another excellent method of discipline is to ignore a child who's acting up. This may not work very well, but it certainly is easy. What people often mistake for permissiveness in modern parents is actually firm discipline exercised by means of this technique. Ignoring a child kills two birds with one stone. When you pay no attention to your kid, you're also respecting his privacy. A good way to show love while inflicting punishment at the same time. Do not be dismayed if your child seems to want more affection than ignoring him provides. Children like a lot of affection, but they also like a lot of candy, which goes to show that children have no idea what's good for them. Explain to the child that it would be rude, a form of lying, really, to show too much affection to somebody you aren't going to sleep with. Imparting values to the child. Naturally, you want a child to be mature and respectful and keep out of your hair, but simple vanity will also dictate that you want the child to turn out exactly like you. This is best accomplished by example. Yell at the child and boss him around to show him what it's like to be self-actualized and have control over his environment. But never make a child feel guilty. One of the most persistent problems plaguing adults in our society is guilt feelings. Make it clear to the child that feeling guilt is not mentally healthy. Let him know that if he feels guilty, he's not really guilty. He's really insane. The facts of life. The principal fact of life is, of course, death. Even very young children need to be informed about dying. Explain the concept of death very carefully to your child. This will make threatening him with it much more effective. As for sex, modern life has made telling a child about this much easier, in fact, unnecessary. You should, however, have a birds and bees talk with your child just to make sure he has sex figured out by the time he's 5. He's not paying much attention to the world around him if he doesn't, and maybe you should have him check for mental retardation. Medical problems. Hyperactivity is a medical tragedy that strikes one out of every one modern children. You should see a doctor about it. Maybe he'll give your child drugs and you can steal them. When children grow up. Always remember that grown children will turn into parents themselves. Your own parents, for instance, they are nothing but grown children and you should treat them as such. Be extra lenient, however, if they've been judged still competent to change their wills. Because of their size, parents may be difficult to discipline properly. Most modern people try to get outside help. This outside help should be outside of town in a nursing home, or even better, in a nursing home outside the state. Anyway, it should be far enough that you have an excuse for not visiting very often. Parents should be given only a modest and sensible allowance, and they should be encouraged to save up for things. This builds character. It also helps pay for the funeral. 15. After marriage. The bonds of wedlock are so heavy that it takes two to carry them, sometimes three. Alexandre Dumas. Nothing is so satisfying to the relatives of a young couple, so pleasing to their friends, or so gratifying to themselves as a beautiful divorce. The divorce announcement. When a couple decide to divorce, they should inform both sets of parents before having a party and telling all their friends. This is not only courteous, but practical. Parents may be very willing to pitch in with comments, criticism, and malicious gossip of their own to help the divorce along. Announcing the divorce in the newspapers. Divorces are commonly announced in the newspaper just before either party knows the divorce is coming. A typical announcement reads, "Seen out every night in New York, heart-stoppingly handsome financier Bilkman Bankstock. Darling Mrs. B.B., Flipsy to friends, is skiing in Gstaad." A photograph usually accompanies the announcement, showing Mr. Bankstock with a 16-year-old Ford model. When to divorce. There is no preferred season for divorce. It can take place at any time. But the custom of a long marriage is falling out of fashion. A brief pre-divorce period is favored because it's best for final separation to take place before the romance is gone from a marriage. Otherwise, the couple are likely to have no regrets. Having no regrets is a common, even popular, modern condition. It is nevertheless to be avoided. Having no regrets is what robs modern alcoholism of poignancy. It has also ruined modern verse. Asking consent. It is a very charming tradition for the man to go to his wife and ask for her consent to a divorce, even if she has been consorting with zoo chimps and the whole U.S. Navy. In reality, of course, the man makes up his own mind first and only then asks permission from the people who matter. If his lawyer and accountant say no, that he can't afford it, continuing with the divorce is still acceptable. Shooting the wife is not, unless what's shot is a photograph of her with the monkey. The wife may also propose a divorce to her husband, especially if she can prove he was involved with the same midshipman as she. Either way, the divorce should be conducted in a polite manner, which is to say there should be plenty of screaming, yelling, threats, and accusations. It would be exceedingly impolite to deprive friends and relatives of the unique pleasures attendant upon a messy divorce. Parties. Parties for the husband who's getting a divorce are given by his friends. Parties for the wife are given by her friends. At her parties, the wife first officially wears the pained expression of long-suffering decency. That expression is to be worn throughout the divorce proceedings. When you have been a mutual friend of the married couple and cannot decide where your allegiance lies, you should always side with the richer person. Given the mercenary nature of modern divorce lawyers, the richer person will, in the end, be the one more wronged. When a divorce does not work out. When two people are in love, nothing gives greater perfection to their happiness than the knowledge that one or the other is getting rid of a spouse. But if things are not going well with the divorce, it is absurd, in this day and age of no commitments, to feel any untoward commitment to separation. Some people are just not meant to be divorced. Unhappy as it may make you in the short term, staying married may have long-term benefits. You can elicit much more sympathy from friends over a bad marriage than you ever can from a good divorce. Gifts. It is a nice touch for a newly divorced man's friends to get together and make him a present of some things he will need to set up a new household. Useful items include liquor, interesting phone numbers, more liquor, and if the man is young or wants to pretend he is, drugs. An appropriate gift to the ex-wife from the husband's friends is to give her a tumble, or at least try to. When a woman is no longer in her first youth or has lost her figure, her own friends may want to get her something more practical. The plug-in electric vibrators are much superior to the battery-operated kind. Children. Naturally, children must be considered in a divorce, considered valuable pawns in the nasty legal and financial contest that is about to ensue. Also, if you have ignored a child in the past, a nice way to show him attention now is to launch a massive custody fight or even snatch the kid so that he can get the thrill of seeing his name and photograph on a milk carton or supermarket shopping bag. What to call former in-laws, etc. One difficult problem of divorce is knowing what to call an ex-mother-in-law, a former uncle by marriage, and other relatives of a discarded spouse. Most people call them shitheels, four-flushers, or dirt. New husbands or wives of former spouses may be called similar names, or they may be called on the phone and told a thing or two they didn't know before. Thus, one divorce begets another, and the wonderful atmosphere of romance, which used to exist only for the young and single, is made to pervade our entire social fabric, and civilization is improved. Section 3. Formal Etiquette. For the hoary and social curse gets hoarier and hoarier, and it stinks a trifle worse than in the days of Queen Victoria. When they married and gave in marriage, they danced at the county ball, and some of them kept a carriage, and the flood destroyed them all. Hilaire Belloc. 16. The Recrudescence of Formal Ceremony. I ate for 2 hours and didn't recognize a thing I ate except an olive. Tom Mix, telling of a testimonial dinner given in his honor at the Hotel Astor. For most of the 20th century, we Americans have been an informal bunch who preferred to ignore conventional social rites, dispense with pomp and circumstance, and set out highball glasses right on the George II sideboard without using coasters. Elaborate ceremonies with complex rituals, formalities, and taboos are the hallmarks of civilization, and we don't have one, so what the heck? However, due to the past decade's enormous insider trading profits and consequent nouveau riche insecurities, the large-scale social fetes that were the staple of entertainment for our great-grandparents have made an enormous, loathsome comeback, and nobody knows how to behave during them. Perhaps you will be invited to a cotillion in Grosse Pointe, or a tea dance in Santa Barbara, or maybe you'll trifle with somebody's daughter in Savannah, and he'll insist on a duel with pistols at sunrise. Of course, you won't know how to behave in these situations. No one would. Just follow the lead of your hostess, and remember the value of nonchalance. A well-mannered person is never worried about what to do, because anything can be done in a well-mannered way. And a well-mannered person is never worried about what to think, because he doesn't. Below are brief descriptions of some formal ceremonies you may encounter. Remember, no matter how elaborate and complicated such affairs may seem, you can always sneak up the back stairs, smoke a joint on the landing, and go play Nintendo RoboCop with your butthead host's 10-year-old son. The Visit of Empty Form. Victorian ladies used to spend a lot of time leaving calling cards at each other's houses. The lady who left the card pretended she was coming for a visit, and the lady who received the card pretended she wasn't home, which she usually wasn't because she was out leaving a card at some other lady's house. The purpose of this activity was to give Victorian ladies something to do all day, to keep them from going lesbian while the men were off building railroads. Calling cards were bent at the upper right-hand corner to indicate congratulations, at the lower right-hand corner to indicate condolence, and diagonally once, twice, and three times to make a tiny paper airplane. The Visit of Empty Form has now been replaced by the Phone Call of Empty Form, wherein the lady who makes the call pretends she has something to say, and the lady who receives the call pretends there's someone on the other line. Tea. Tea was one of the 10 daily meals eaten during the 19th century when it was fashionable to be fat. The other 9 were breakfast, elevenses, lunch, luncheon, tiffin, high tea, dinner, supper, and midnight snack. Tea was properly accompanied by such food as cucumber and watercress sandwiches, which was how the Victorians managed to make even salad fattening. All the women in the neighborhood who weren't paying enough visits of empty form used to come in to tea. The great distinction between tea and other meals was that the hostess served tea herself. This was to keep the servants out of the room while the ladies discussed whether to go lesbian or get their husbands to build something closer to home, like copper smelteries. Tea is still popular in Washington, D.C., where any sort of useless and silly activity can always find a place. Receptions. A reception is a modern tea with a guest of honor who's not important enough to rate a dinner or who can't be trusted to be sober after 6 p.m. An author is the usual guest of honor at a reception. Don't worry about not having read his book. It's not considered well-bred these days to spend time alone doing things like reading. It makes it look as though you don't have friends. Instead of praising the author's writing, tell him you admire his work. Strictly speaking, this is true. If he didn't work, you would not admire his welfare payments coming out of your taxes. The principal entertainment at a reception is watching the author try to figure out where his hostess keeps the booze. Formal luncheon. A formal luncheon is a device for wrecking the middle of the day. Why anyone would take something as pleasant as lunch and mess it up with ceremony more appropriate to a church service is beyond understanding. You might as well have a funeral for your food. In fact, that would be more interesting. Get some china with a black border and serve a beef dish by having it pulled into your dining room on a gun carriage drawn by a riderless black stallion with a couple of gravy boats turned backward in the stirrups. This should rate a photo spread in People magazine, which a formal luncheon never does. Garden parties. Garden parties are afternoon affairs that were extremely popular in the early years of this century. They were encouraged by nationalistic European governments in order to make people so bored that they were willing to have a First World War, anything to get out of attending another garden party. Garden parties consist of standing around in the garden. That's all. Sometimes sticky little drinks are served. The only way to get a worthwhile amount of alcohol out of these is to dunk your whole head in the punch bowl. As a matter of fact, the real cause of the First World War was a German ambassador doing just that at a royal garden party at Buckingham Palace. For public consumption, however, a story was circulated about Archduke Ferdinand's assassination. Dances and balls. Rich people didn't used to go to nightclubs. They used to dance in their own houses. That way they never had to go home to get more drugs. Also, rich people had very big houses in those days and couldn't think what else to do with some of the rooms. Dances were sometimes given in the afternoon. These were called tea dances and were held to show the neighbors that you were so rich you didn't need a job and could do anything you wanted in the middle of the day, no matter how expensive and wasteful. More often, dances and balls were held at night. Dances were small affairs. True balls were much larger and were always distinguished by a bright red carpet on the sidewalk outside the house. Then, as now, that's what tasteful people did with bright red carpets. Threw them out on the sidewalk. Balls also had two bands so that there was continuous music and no excuse for getting caught with someone else's wife in the orangery between numbers. A really elaborate ball with prearranged dancing partners for each piece of music was called a cotillion. The main activity at cotillions was the performance of duty dances. These were dances with huge fat people vaguely related to your mother. All dances and balls lasted until 4 in the morning, and people were so dressed up that they had to be moved onto the dance floor by servants with block and tackle rigs. Rich people were very glad when nightclubs came along. They sold their big houses to funeral directors, slipped into something comfortable, and ran down to El Morocco, the Stork Club, and other such places to watch Hollywood types get into fistfights with photographers. They're still there. Charity balls. A charity ball is like a dance, except it's tax deductible. This is a wonderful invention. Unfortunately, there are more people who want tax deductions than there are charities to give dances for. At last count, the only charities left that did not have charity balls attached to them were relatives by marriage of victims of Epstein-Barr syndrome, recovering shopaholics, children who are afraid of being kissed by fat girls while playing post office, the dizziness from standing up too fast fund. Debuts. In its original form, a debut was the formal occasion upon which